This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Friends and neighbors, this is episode number 79 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Friends, have you been watching the election coverage?
I keep refreshing Google.
I've been avoiding it like the plague.
Chris, have you been keeping up with it while you were at work?
A little bit. Like, I was trying not to say anything that was like possibly disturb anyone, but I was just like, well, all the crazy states have already voted, so maybe not crazy later. So I'm just gonna keep an open mind, but hope that ultimately something good will come out of all of this shenanigans.
Yeah, I've been keeping up with Twitter, and there's a lot of talk of drinking, stress drinking, drinking depending on what the results are. And I don't drink, but I'm definitely a stress eater. So I made sure to get an extra big order of Chinese food. So I've got like 3 spare egg rolls. I've got some chow mein left. I've got some peach rings. So either way, I'm prepared to eat my feelings later. So if we can't record next week because my kidneys have burst from eating too much, you know why.
Got it.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw the picture I posted on Facebook, but a couple of my friends and I got together and we bought a Trader Joe's White House cookie kit, where you take these pieces of cookie and you break them apart and you glue them together with frosting and assemble a White House. So that was our de-stressing activity for last night.
Nice.
Is that like a gingerbread house?
Kind of, yeah, except it's shaped like the White House.
Oh, that's adorable. Can you eat it?
The expiration date was in October, so we decided not to eat it, but we still had fun building it.
Because that would be my temptation. Like, that's really cute and all, but like, if I plow through all of my other rations and I'm still really feeling some things, I'm going to eat the house.
Eat the house.
And the Senate.
And the Senate. Oh, that was good. So let's go ahead and get started. So, Chris, you and I had an action-packed weekend at Grand Prix Dallas. Why don't you tell everybody what was so exciting about it, starting with our flight to Dallas.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. So Erin and I get up very early. We travel down to the airport. We have plenty of time ahead of us. We get to our gate. I go up to the gate, like desk counter, and I ask them for my pre-board pass like I normally do. Back when Erin and I went to PAX, I think it was, they had offered me a medical pass so that I could board early because I have very big hips. And sometimes it is really difficult to sit in that seat for too long and make the other arm still go down. It can start hurting. And so there was a lady who took pity on me and was like, here, we're going to get you this medical pass. It'll be great. So ever since then, I've just asked for one. And then I'm able to get a seat next to me so I don't have to deal with trying to like cram all of my everythings and everyone else's everythings into like 2 different seats. So the lady at the counter, from what I could understand from me communicating with her, she was going to get me an extra seat like I normally get. And apparently that was not the case. So we board with the rest of the pre-boards. We sit down. We're waiting. And people keep coming over and asking if they can sit next to me. I'm like, no, I'm sorry. You know, I have a medical thing. You know, no one can sit here. Da, 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 da. And multiple people have come over to ask if they can sit there. And I politely said no. The flight attendant came by and was asking questions. I'm like, well, I gave him this thing at the gates. I was like, if I was supposed to have something else, they didn't give it to me. And she left for a moment and she came back. And then she was starting to say, I think something about like how like that wasn't going to work or like we needed to do something. But at this point, we had had several people come over and bother us. It was a lot of things. And Erin basically told her that she wasn't going to win this fight that basically they were trying to have with us. And she better just kind of just like, no, you're not going to get anywhere with this. Just leave it alone. She took Erin saying that as a threat and went and like tattled to the pilot or something, because she was gone and we were just chilling there waiting. And the next thing we knew, another woman and a gentleman are coming up to me and telling me to grab my stuff and get off the plane. I'm like, what? Like, why? But they weren't like telling me anything. They were just like, grab your stuff and you have to come with us. And I'm like, why? Like, what did I do? Like, I don't understand. So then Erin said, well, if she's going to go, then I'm going with her because we're on this flight together. So they're like, okay, grab your stuff, come with me. We get off the plane, we're walking up the ramp, and I'm just like, I'm really embarrassed right now. I had to like hit everyone with my butt just to get off the plane. It was just like a big hassle. And we're walking up the ramp, and Erin was like, I can't believe you're putting her through this. She has anxiety. You know, she has a reason why, you know, she has the extra seat next to her. Why is this a problem? And the lady kept giving her a bunch of attitude. And then Erin was fighting back with her, being like, no, you're not going to talk to me this way type of thing. And it all just ended up like this big, huge, like, pile of fuckery. And like, we get out of the actual like ramp that brings you back into where the gate area is, and they're, you know, still being very like stern and businesslike, being like, well, we need to play with, well, what's the deal? And they're going like, well, we have nothing in your history that says this. And I'm like, well, wait. I said, you know, I always get this. This is not a big deal. And basically trying to reason with them as to like, we weren't being liars. Like, this is a thing. So Aaron's trying to record what's going on because we don't know what's going to happen. I've never been pulled off a plane before, ever in my life. I've stalled a plane before. I've never been pulled off a plane before. And it was just very overwhelming and nerve-wracking. And of course, I'm just like going to pieces at this point. So my anxiety's on 10. And they basically start going on about how they're not going to let Aaron fly. I can fly without her if I want to, but they're not going to let her back on the plane because of how she talked to them. And I'm like, she's not a bad person. I'm like, she's not even a mean person. I'm like, you know, she just is concerned about what's going on and she's standing up for me. And like, you know, I can understand why. We've had a bunch of people asking us multiple questions and we've told you, you know, the answers, or if there was something that we need to do differently, nobody told us. And we were under the impression this was all going to be cool and it wasn't cool. So like, I'm trying to figure out how we're going to get there. And then they're like, well, we're not going to let her go until the next day. And I'm like, well, that's just not going to work. I'm like, we're going together and I'm not going without her. But it kind of felt like they were trying to get me to leave her there and I wasn't going to do that. So they were like, well, you know, because of how she talked, you know, we could have her arrested, or, you know, she's recording us without our consent. And I was like, well, you have to understand. I was like, you know, we know someone who was kicked off a plane recently because people didn't like what they were wearing, which was nothing offensive or crazy or anything. I said, so can you imagine why we would be concerned? And I just ended up kind of, you know, devolving. Eventually, they finally were like, okay, you're being reasonable. You're not being crazy. Because apparently, I keep wanting to call them stewardesses, excuse me, flight attendant. it's just ingrained in my brain. The flight attendant apparently had told the pilot about what happened, but they thought that I was Erin. So when they came over and were like, you have to come with us. And I was like, what is this about? Then they realized that I wasn't someone that said whatever was said. And even what she said was not even like bad. So it was just crazy. So ultimately we were able to get on a flight together later in the afternoon. So we arrived a little later than we would have liked, but I think that at the end of the day, it was fine because the flight crew that we had going there on that particular flight were really nice and really awesome. I didn't get that vibe from the original flight at all. So I think it all worked out for the best. And I have never had that experience before, but now I'm just going to keep a copy of the seat reserve thing, like from every previous flight, and be like, I just need one of these. Apparently there was some miscommunication and they never gave me the right thing. But then they tried to play it off like I didn't ask for it. It's like, but I did. So it was just this big whole thing. I don't know if you want to say anything else about that before I go on, Erin.
Yeah, you know, it's frustrating because, you know, I've worked customer service jobs, and in my mind, there were so many opportunities to turn this around to where it didn't have to go this way. So Chris is right. You know, we first went to PAX last year, and Chris had discovered that this was an option. And we've flown a couple of times since then, used this option, and never had a problem. And Chris even asked, like, when we were getting ready to board, they had asked for the coupon. I call it the coupon. And the guy who scans your boarding pass said, well, you don't need one. They'll know. Those are his words. They'll know. And I remember Chris and I looking at each other and thinking something was odd about that. But ultimately, it was like, you know what? You have the Southwest shirt on. You work here. We're going to trust your judgment, because why would you steer us wrong? You work mm-hmm. here. So when you tell me that everything's fine, we're going to assume everything's fine. So we go to sit down, and we have this young man who wants to sit with us. Chris is very nice about it and says, I have this thing. You can't sit here. Flight attendant comes over. Again, Chris is very nice about this. That's the opportunity where the flight attendant could have turned all of this around. Once Chris said, I don't have the coupon, if the coupon was that important, the flight attendant could have gone and got the damn coupon. Like, the flight attendant would, like, if customer service is a thing, the flight attendant could have been like, you know what? I have this customer. They obviously need the extra seat. They're obviously, you know, in some sort of distress. Let me go ahead and fix this issue for you. But instead, the flight attendant comes back and says, nope, I don't see a coupon, so you can't sit here. There's just no coupon here. Sorry. What? No. Like, why is that your first reaction here? Like, that's what really upset me. The man comes back again. So the guy who tries to sit with us the first time then tries a second time because he sees that we've talked to the flight attendant, and maybe he thinks that something's going to change. So at that point, yes, we were getting testy because we've already done our due diligence twice. Now we're going on three times. Mm-hmm. So the guy walks away. The stewardess comes back, the flight attendant, and says, I don't see anything in the system. And again, rather than trying to rectify the issue, she runs to the pilot and says that I threatened her. Doesn't even get her story straight as to who said this. She goes and tells the pilot that Chris did. Chris and I look nothing alike, for those who are playing along at home. Nothing. There's no way to mistake the two of us. The pilot has a zero tolerance policy and says, I want her off the flight. Another opportunity was when the employees from Southwest came on. So when we're going on our fifth visit from people trying to question Chris about their seat, they could have approached it and been like, hey, you know, can we, they could have even had the conversation with us sitting down. But when you just go up to somebody and say, I need you off the plane, you don't tell them why, you're not saying it in like an approachable, like, hey, can we talk to you for a second? Can we just pull you? No, it was, you need to grab your stuff and you need to come with us. How do you think someone's going to react to that, especially somebody who doesn't know? You know, so if that was the case and you really needed to talk to Chris, there are other ways that you could have done that than telling them to get off the flight. You know, we did end up coming off the flight together. I was taking pictures because I didn't know what was going to happen. I'm a trans girl. Chris is non-binary. We don't know what's going to happen to us. You know, how many stories do you hear of black folk, you know, and having issues with police? And, you know, we had the Amanda Stevens situation, you know, a trans woman who was thrown off a flight for having Black Panther garb on, the comic book character Black Panther at that. We don't know what's going to happen. And so if things go sideways, I wanted some insurance of, this is us getting off the plane. This is Chris having a panic attack. This is Chris negotiating with the staff so that I can document sort of what happened. Chris tries negotiating with them. And again, customer service fail number three. They're trying to separate us. And I can literally hear them saying to Chris, like, well, your friend's a bit of a pistol. And if she's like this on the ground, what's she going to be like in the air? Why are you trying to separate friends? Like, if I had done this, like, let's say I could have handled this better. Okay, fine. You being the customer service person could be like, you know what? Your friend popped off, but let's get you to another flight. Like, how about a 7 o'clock flight? How about, let's say I have to come back tomorrow morning, putting us on the same flight together. What are you trying to tell my friend that I'm terrible for and trying to get them to leave me? Like, what is that? And so I'm like behind this pillar because I don't want to get arrested. And so I'm tweeting with Southwest. I'm DMing with Southwest. Chris comes up to me and she says, well, they're willing to let you fly if you appear calm or if you appear, you know, relaxed or whatever. So I go up to the counter and I'm kind of looking at the floor, you know, like when little kids do something wrong, they look at the floor and kind of like kick dust. And I was like, my friend says you want to talk to me, but I don't want to get arrested. So what do we do? And the lady's like, all right, come here. So she pulls me over and she basically says, you know, I didn't like that you recorded us. I didn't like the way that you talked to the stewardess. And I was like, I was protecting my friend. I was like, my friend is a person of size. They are already anxious. They already don't like to fly. We did our due diligence. We told you guys numerous times what the deal was. You chose to go to 11. I was like, I didn't know what was happening to my friend. I was like, everything I did, this wasn't a situation where I was trying to be the bigger bitch. This wasn't like a pissing contest. This wasn't me being a rageaholic. This was me looking out for my friend. I didn't know where you were taking them. I didn't know why you were bothering us. And my only concern was being with my friend. And if that was a problem for you, I'm not sorry. I'm not going to apologize for that. The woman goes, well, you appear to be kind of calmed down. She was like, we can get you on a flight. Do I have your promise that you will remain calm? And I was like, I just want to be with my friend. That's always been the concern. So she tells me that Chris and I are going to be on a 2:30 flight. She tries shaking my hand. I'm like, all right, fine. I'll shake your hand. I don't like you, but I'll shake your hand. It'll get me on the plane. I will shake your hand. I'll shake everyone's hand. So we walk away. That Chris has a boarding pass, and then it dawns on me that I don't have a boarding pass. So I go up to the counter, and there's two different staff members there. And I was like, hey, girl, my flight got pushed back. I didn't want to say I'd been thrown off the flight. And I was like, I need to get my boarding pass. And so the guy looks at the computer, and he goes, that flight is booked, and your name's not on it.
I'm like, oh, my gosh. What?
So I'm just like, that bitch. So I'm thinking that she, like, you know, manipulated me or conned me or something, getting the last laugh on old Aaron, you know? So they end up calling her out. And I'm thinking she's going to, like, you know, laugh at me or something. And then she goes, oh, no, I just had your seat protected. And I'm like, what? this is like a Con Air thing? Are they going to put me in a crate and throw me in the car? Oh, like, what are we dealing with here? And she goes, no, that just means that I sort of reserved your seat for you because we have been having full flights all night, all day. And she's like, I just wanted to make sure that your seats didn't get sold. So then she puts my name in. She gives me a pass. And she goes, I hope you and your friend have a nice trip. And then we both have our boarding passes, but we're still kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
So, like, we're getting on the plane. We're, like, really nervous. We're looking around. We're like, all right. We're thinking something's going to happen. But it does end up being a pretty effortless flight, and we do get there safely a little later than we would have liked. But like I said, it was just really scary. It just happened so fast. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like there are so many opportunities for Southwest to have handled it differently to where – you know, it just didn't have to end up like this. And I, you know, there are things I could have handled better, but like I said, I was protecting Chris, and ultimately I don't regret doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was crazy. It was very strange. But now we can tell, you know, our grandchildren or great nieces and nephews or something, be like, I got kicked off a flight in 2016.
Well, it's funny because, like, we were getting ready for the GP, and, you know, every once in a while, unfortunately, sometimes you do have crummy opponents. And I kept waiting for, like, I kept waiting to have, like, a douchey opponent so I could just look at them really closely in the eye and be like, I was thrown off the airplane. And just have them be like, oh, okay, cool. All right. Sorry. I didn't mean to tell you what to do. I'm sorry. Your card's fine. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, you're good.
So once we got there, how was your GP, Chris?
It was good. I unfortunately did not live, the day two dream. I really wanted to. I really tried. But unfortunately we just couldn't get there. I was very hopeful coming off my round one bye that surely round two, I would either face something really terrible or really good for me, matchups that, you know, I have reasonably played against before. No. round two, I immediately played eggs. But it was like, I was explaining this to Christopher Preston on the way here. He's like eggs with what? Like, what was the win con? I'm like, Emrakul. So it was just like, it was just not fun. The first game, at first, I was not sure what he was playing until, like, maybe the third turn. And then I was like, oh, God. I'm like, is this an eggs variant? I'm like, I really don't want to do this right now. I ended up losing to eggs out of three. The first game, he just kind of took it. The second game, I was able to just obliterate him. I had Chalice on zero and just kind of went off. He tried to sneak a Mox Opal through, and I was like, countered. It's like that's not gonna happen. I know that trick. Mm-hmm. So then they went off the third game. I was like, as long as you can show me you can do it, I will let you have it. It was funny because after the first game, I looked to see how much time had gone by, and it had been about 20 plus minutes. I'm like, okay,
Jesus. I can see.
I know, it just made me sad. I just wanted to be. I think I did say to him at one point, you know, if you want to play with Emrakul, there's other ways you can do it faster. be like way faster than this. The third round, I played elves. My opponent was really, really awesome. He actually traveled to the GP from Dubai.
Holy crap.
Yes.
It's a long way.
I know. I was like, oh, did you travel far? He's like, oh, Dubai. And I was like, just, you know, like you do.
Just like around the world. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was like, dang. I think he told me he was like, I could be exaggerating this, but maybe like 17 hours or something like that. And I was like, oh, holy gosh. Shit.
Just for the GP?
Mm-hmm.
Just for the GP. Wow. Because I met a young man who was from, he was stationed in Germany. Like he was from here, military in Germany, but he was coming home to see family and the GP happened to be here. So he flew from Germany, but he had other reasons to come. But like, wow, that far for a GP.
Yeah, I don't, if he did have family around, I'm not sure. It just seemed like his main focus was to get there to play Magic. Because I was asking him, you know, does he have like a very big Magic following there? And he was saying, you know, if we do like modern tournaments, they'll get maybe a big turnout is like 30 to 50 people or something. And I was like, dang, I'm like, that's like an FNM night for some places. I'm like, holy shit. But he said it was like very big for like Limited out there, and he mostly is a Limited player. So he was a really nice dude. It was really cool to meet him. It was less than ideal to get swept by him with his Elves deck. However, you know, he was a really nice person, and you know, everyone that we encountered throughout the weekend, just as like a sidebar, was really awesome. I didn't really encounter anyone that I was like, ugh, I wouldn't put them out if they were on fire, but you know, lots of nice individuals. Round four, I won out of three versus Jeskai Delver, so that felt really good. The only thing that kind of felt bad was at one point, my opponent says to me, after we were cleaning up after game one, and he said, you know, you missed some Valakut triggers there, and I was like, what? And he was just like, yeah, you missed some Valakut triggers. I'm like, I only had five lands, including like two Valakuts. I didn't miss any triggers. He's like, oh, okay. Oh, and then also, my opponent the previous round from Dubai, when I pulled up my sideboard notes, he's like, ooh, I don't think that's something you can do. I'm like, oh, it is. It is. I'm like, you can call a judge if you'd like. And he was like, okay. So he called the judge. He's like, oh, she has some notes. And he's like, yep, it's on your sideboard. It's all good. And he's like, okay. So that was interesting. And then round five, I won out of three versus a really nice lady player who is on Mono Green Stompy. I got to talk to her and her boyfriend for a bit. She was telling me that the first deck he had tried to show her how to play Magic with was Titan Shift. And I was like, well, that's kind of a complicated deck a little bit, you know, to learn Magic for the first time. But it seemed like she was really into Stompy. She was really impressed that I knew what the deck was, because I guess a lot of her opponents that day did not know what it was. And I was like, oh, yeah, Stompy. Yeah, I've seen that. So we had a nice game together, a nice conversation. I went on to lose out of 3-2 Kiki Combo. Just got there quicker than I did, unfortunately. Round seven was a very, very heartbreaking loss out of 3 to Merfolk. Spreading Seas did work the first game. The second game, I wrecked him. And then the third game, a lone Seas claim was able to just take me off of my colors. And so I was not able to go off. I needed another mana if I wanted to do it. So unfortunately, day two was dead after that point. If I hadn't lost so badly to Merfolk, I probably would have stayed in just to get the Planeswalker points. But at that point, my heart was broken and I was like, nope, I can't do this the last two rounds. I'm just gonna bow out and not do it. So after that was done, Erin asked me if I wanted to do a Quickfire Modern event with her. So I said yes. So we went ahead and did that. Now, had we known like all the details involved, we probably wouldn't have done it. Because we're like, oh, sweet, this is pretty inexpensive. You know, it's supposed to go real quick. No big. We didn't know there was no sideboarding because it was kind of hidden in the fine print, so to speak. So it's like, oh, okay. Because she was going to play Storm and I was going to play Infect, because both wanted to get more practice with the decks. So I sit down for the first round and I get to play the mirror. So I was like, no, I'm like, I'm not going to learn much from this because I'd rather play other matchups first and then, you know, learn the nuances of the mirror. But it ended up being helpful afterwards, because after we played through our very quick, like 3-minute game or something, he was actually a very seasoned Infect player. So he was able to explain to me different things about the mirror, about the deck in general. So it was really nice to be able to talk to him, talking to him about upgrading it if I wanted to make it Legacy. So even though our game was not quite as fun, it was nice to be able to kind of brainstorm and learn from someone that knows the deck a lot better than I do. God, the next round, I played this burn player that beat me and surgically extracted my, God, what was it? My mite of old Crosas? Like, you're running a surgical extraction and burn? And I'm like, who does this? You know, no I just.
No one does ex- that.
Exactly. And I'm like, and I'm literally like, why? And he's like, oh, I just find the card very fascinating. And I'm like, that's fair. I just don't know that it belongs in burn, but to each their own. And he's like, oh, I think I want to put it in every deck now. And I'm like, might be going a little far, but okay. Aww. I'll let you live the dream. The third round, I think I got the bye. Sounds correct. And then I sat down to play versus Ad Nauseam, and they went off on turn three, and I was like, well, and a good time was had by all. So I learned like nothing, but that's okay. It was just very strange. And then, let's see, everything's blurring together. We ate a lot of good food while we were there.
So much food.
Mm-hmm. We went to, on Friday, we went to Sonny Bryan's, where apparently mac and cheese is considered a vegetable for the uninformed.
And where they come around with rolls. Like, there's a woman, they just give you free carbs. Like, they'll just come around your table and be like, more carbs, more yes. rolls? And you're like, yes.
Be like, yes, I would like that. And I would like more meat. And they have cobblers of the day there. And on Friday, they serve all of the cobblers. And I'm like, woohoo, I'm going to have cherry. So I did. And it was delightful. And after our Quickfire Modern, we went to Raising Cane's, where we had never been before. And they served
no, Raising Cane's thing. Chicken fingers. Get it right.
Oh, I just assume it just sounds so much more domineering if you're just like Raising Cane's. Like, that's why, like, when we first passed by, I'm like, what kind of fucking place is this? You know, it's just like, all right, it's a chicken joint. Fair enough. I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't that. But it was good, and Texas toast is, like, my bae, so it was completely fine, and there was, like, sweet tea as far as the eye could see, and lemonade, and it was delightful, and then we went home and passed out and decided to do team trios the next day for playmats, and unfortunately did not do so hot in that event. We lost the first one. We got the bye the second round. The third round, we lost again, and then the fourth round, we had to wait too long, so we said, forget it. It was just taking forever for all the rounds to turn over, just in general, but then for this event, it was exceptionally long. So while we were just kind of hanging out, we were talking to Allie, our friend from around the Magic community, and she's a judge and awesome and does her podcast, and we got to visit with her and other friends and just kind of chill. My deck for that was really sweet, though. It's unfortunate that I only got to play it really for one round where it actually worked, because I was able to do like infinite energy and making Thopters with the Whirler Virtuoso and the, what is it, Decoction Module and the Reckless Fireweaver to do damage and stuff. So I was like, do, 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 ping you, make these. Do, 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 do. And it was just awesome. It was everything. And all in all, our trip was pretty baller. We had good food. We had good company. We got to stay with Andy. And it was just awesome. So I would go back to the Lone Star State again. It was favorable.
Yeah, Texas, you know, Chris hit the nail on the head. I mean, even though our flight there was so troublesome, Texas itself was an amazingly positive place. We were getting approached by like a record number of listeners. I gave away all of my swag, all of my stickers, all my magnets, all my water bottles. Everybody was so lovely. Harold, Camden, Jerry, I met so many amazing people that just, and it wasn't like they, you know, normally people will say, I love the show just sort of in passing, but like everybody who stopped me would say they loved the show and why they loved the show. And it was just brimming with positivity. All of my opponents were great. All the judges were great. I was just blown away by that. And that alone made me want to come back to Texas. So we started the day on Friday. We ended up going to a really nice local game store called Madness Games. It was massive. They had three F&Ms going with room to spare for more, backpacks, comics, clothing, miniatures. I mean, it was just it was madness, quite frankly. And it was a really nice local game store. They had ladies working there, ladies shopping there. It was clean. It was spacious. It just had everything you could ever want. And it was the kind of local game store where, like, you have to kind of tell yourself no, because there's just so many things there to buy, where it was like, of course I want a reversible Harley Quinn hoodie for $50. And I was like, no, you don't. You're not right now. You're on vacation. And then you're like, of course I need these giant 20-sided die. No, you don't, girl. Just walk away. And, you know, there's just so many things. Of course I need Doctor Who underwear. No, you really don't. Just keep it moving. But it was a really nice local game store. I got a really nice deck box there. I did end up playing Dredge. And, you know, Chris kind of touched on this a little bit too. There were a lot of colorful decks there. And I think you can tell that by the way that Scred Red won the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But there was just a lot of things there that I didn't expect to face. So I had a round one bye. Round two, I faced a pretty standard Titan Shift opponent. That went pretty well. Round three, I beat Ad Nauseam. And I feel like that was one of those matches where I knew what to do because I play the deck. And even my opponent had commented, he was like, most people don't know what my stuff does. And I was like, well, I play this at home. So I knew when to destroy your artifacts and things like that. Round four is when things started to get colorful. I lost a Quicksilver Tron.
What is that?
So it's Tron, but they also ran Quicksilver Amulets, which is that amulet where you tap four and then just put a creature into play.
Okay. Mm.
So turn five rolls around and I've got like a modest 9 power on the board, like nothing crazy. And I go to swing in and he taps the amulet and he goes, Kozilek, Herald of Truth. Surprise! Here's a 12-12 Annihilator with Annihilator 4. No big on turn 5. Just bloop. Doesn't even have Tron. Not even Tron. So he's just got like this mess of lands. Doesn't have Tron, but he had enough to cast the Quicksilver and enough to activate the next turn. And bloop, there's Kozilek. And I'm like, well, that significantly changes the combat math. And so I couldn't get through that. I did end up winning one game. And then game 3, he just landed like 3 Wyrmcoil Engines. And I was like, I can't get through 3 Wyrmcoil Engines. I was like, no matter how this happens, like, you're either going to get tokens, you're going to gain a bunch of life. I cannot break through this. And I was a little tilted, not at him necessarily, but just like at Wyrmcoil Engine, where I was like, I can't do this. Like, I can't get through this. So round 5, I lost to a deck called Suicide Blue. Yeah. I'm not really clear as to what it does either, but what I was able to make out was its Thing in the Ice, and like if Death Shadow, it's like Death Shadow, but with Thing in the Ice. So you're using like red, blue, like Monastery, Swift Spear, Thing in the Ice. And if you've never seen a Thing in the Ice that has like 2 counters on it, and then they put 2 Mutagenic Growths on it to lose the counters, and they're like, whoop, it's an 11-12 swing. And you're like, can I see that? Like, you're just like, how did you get here? And so I was just like, and it was really funny because he was wearing all blue too. So I really appreciated his commitment. He had like a blue sleeve, blue mat, blue shirt. Nice guy. But I was just like, I don't know what your deck does. Like, and so it made sideboarding really difficult. So I was like, I don't know what you have. Like, I saw Apostle's Blessing in there. I was just like, I don't know what's going on. So he ended up winning that one. And then my last round, I dropped a 2-4. I faced the mirror, which I had practiced for. I had brought some spicy tech, and my opponent decided to outspicy me by not running Cathartic Reunion. For those playing along at home, Cathartic Reunion is the reason that Dredge is tier 1 right now, without a doubt. Doesn't run him. And it wasn't like he couldn't get them. Oh no, he doesn't like them. You know when you're little and your parents say to you, I didn't raise you like this? That's the thought that came through my head. I was just like, I didn't raise you this way. I didn't raise you Dredge players to not use Cathartic Reunion. What are you doing? He loves his Shriekhorns, but he thinks that if Dredge is too fast, that makes it a liability. And I just dropped. He beat me. And I was just like, I feel some shame right now and I have to go. Because I just didn't know what to say. Like, I couldn't really reason with that. And it hurt a little bit. And so there were lots of colorful lists throughout the weekend. I was seeing a lot of things around me. Like I said, Chris played somebody that was on eggs. Scred Red was a thing. I was just seeing some really, you know, flavorful things, and I didn't prepare for them, and so that was a little difficult. And then we decided to do this event called the Quickfire, because Chris and I had sort of a bad day, and we were like, let's just play these new decks that we built. Only after we sat down did we learn that it's basically just 4 game ones. Mm-hmm. There's no side, it's whoever wins the first game wins. And so obviously there's decks like Affinity, Dredge, you know, decks that really can sort of win on game one. And Sam Black came up to me, the amazing Sam Black. Mind you, Sam Black never comes up to me. Sam Black makes a beeline for me because he sees me at this event and he goes, "Why aren't you playing Dredge?" And I was just like, why? And he goes, "This event is perfect for Dredge." He's like, "You don't even get a game two." He's like, "What are you running?" And I was like, "I just wanted to try my new deck, Sam Black. See, I got my little storm cutters. I got my red and blue dice. Like, keep track of my blue mana." And he's just like, he's just incredulous. He's just like, what?
And he's and he a storm away. Player.
And I was just like, wow, Sam Black came up to me simply to tell me that I should be playing Dredge. And Chris is right. You know, the games were over so fast that we just really didn't take anything away from the event. You know, we had expected to, you know, get some four rounds of Swiss with two games each or three games each. Maybe we could learn about sideboarding and things like that. And that just didn't really happen. All the games were over very quickly. There were some very unique decks in that, you know, format as well. So we didn't do very hot day one. We did come back for Team Trios and we had a lot of fun doing that. But the games were surprisingly long. We didn't expect them to take that long. And we ended up dropping. But great friends. Thank you to our friend Andrew, who was nice enough to host us. I had dinner with Jen Dakeshi, the guy who does the Magic Story audiobooks. Joseph Dunlap from Mana League. So many sweet people were there. Allie from Allie Encampment was there. I just can't say enough good things about Texas. And that really kind of turned the whole thing around with the flight. So while we were in Texas, I read an interview with our own Hallie Santo. Mm-hmm. Okay. What was that like? Tell us about this interview that you did.
So I have been doing a lot of work for Card Kingdom recently, and so I've been spending a lot of time, obviously, with, you know, my fellow Card Kingdom employees, and one of them is Sean Patchen, who's Swords to Plow on Twitter. He's a big Commander player. He has hosted Commander podcasts. He runs a Commander website called General Damage Control, and we happen to be doing a draft together because we've been trying to, you know, put together more employee drafts, and, you know, I actually planned this draft myself because I just wanted to get to know my coworkers better. So he showed up. We ended up both going 2-0 and playing in the finals, and he was just really impressed with my play and was like, "Hey, how would you like to do an interview for my website?" And I was like, "Sure, sounds good." The following Monday, he forwarded me a bunch of interview questions. He just wanted to know about my background and what kind of things I was involved in the Magic community. So we had a brief, you know, email conversation about that. And it's basically posted verbatim, just his questions, my responses. And I thought it was pretty cool. He is definitely trying to branch out and highlight a lot of people doing good in the community who aren't necessarily Commander players. And I even, you know, forwarded a couple people to him for upcoming columns in this series. So hopefully it takes off.
Yeah, you know, we actually talked about you a little bit at the GP. Somebody had mentioned, you know, ladies doing coverage, and somebody brought up Maria, how Maria did coverage and basically knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were kind of talking about other people that could maybe fill the void, or how, you know, a lot of times you sort of ramp up to that, where you start off doing like the written coverage, and then mm-hmm. eventually you can get your foot in the door and do video coverage. And mm-hmm. I don't remember who I was talking to, but somebody had mentioned that they were really, you know, impressed with your work writing, and they were wondering if you were going to not use that, but if you're going to like maybe build up to going on camera. And I was like, well, I think that's something, you know, they might want to do. And, you know, the person I talked to was like, yeah, I think they'd be a really good fit for it. And I really hope that's something that they try for. And so I know at least one person. I know I'm too, Hallie, who'd really like to see you on video. So, you know, hopefully interviews like this and hopefully the writing that you're doing escalates into that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's definitely something that I'm open to. And one of the reasons why I've been doing videos for Card Kingdom is because I'm trying to work on my on-camera presence. I mean, I know I can write. I am not the best at speaking to cameras, so I'm definitely trying to work up to that.
I hope that you do. So, Katie, I understand that you're playing in something this weekend called a Mojo event.
Like, I'm playing Mojo this weekend.
Mojo Katie.
Mojo Katie.
Mojo Katie.
So, Mojo is the Magic Online Judge Open that Wizards puts on every year for judges in the community. And basically they put up like an application, just like you'd apply to work an event. And you just apply for which event you want to play. This year they had three different ones that were all kind of at different times throughout the day. So depending on where you were in the world, maybe one would work, you know, not be at like 3 a.m. your local time or whatever. And so I signed up for one. You could have signed up for all three, but I decided to temper it back a little bit, just try one. but it is a free event, and it is a sealed, and you get promos, I guess we get a playset of Gush, which...
Wow.
I don't know if I'll ever play Gush, but cool to have it. And then it's like a... I think it's a Phantom thing, and it's 5 rounds. It's 1 booster, a win. And then apparently if you finish 4-1 or better, you get an additional prize, which I have not seen posted anywhere. But basically, I'm just doing it for fun and because it's free. And I could always improve my Magic Online skills, as well as I haven't gotten to play much Kaladesh with school and everything. So I don't have any tests next week, and I have a 3-day weekend. So I'm super excited to wake up on Saturday and play, and hopefully it goes okay. I can't decide if I'm going to stream it or not. Because I
stream
don't.
Stream it.
Stream it.
I feel like I always do stupid things on stream.
That's totally fine. You'll be
fine. It's
fine.
Yeah. I know I always do stupid things on stream. It happens to everyone.
It feels like a very large amount of the time. So we will see how I'm feeling. I'll probably stream later this week anyway. I want to play my Pauper deck. And without any exams coming up, my time has been very freed up. So I'll be streaming those. If not Mojo, we will see how I'm feeling. But I'm really excited to play. I haven't played before because I've never really been into Magic Online. But yeah, hopefully it goes well.
Sweet. Yeah, hopefully Pauper should be a lot better too now that they got rid of Peregrine Drake with that emergency ban. Yeah, the Pauper players were so happy about that. And, you know, Pauper is certainly a format that really is kind of based around fun. And so, you know, when you have a card that really is making the format not fun, I feel like it stands out a lot more. And, you know, props to Wizards for kind of recognizing that and listening to that community and doing something about that.
Yep, yeah, for sure.
You can also play your Gushes in Pauper.
There you go.
Oh, well, I'll need to read into that a little more. That seems really saucy.
It's like the one format. It's like the one format where you can play them.
So, yeah, Gushes, isn't it restricted in Vintage or banned?
Yeah,
it is, yeah. Yeah, that's especially if you're a fan of blue cards, Katie, you're really going to love Gush.
I do love blue cards.
Yeah, it's very blue. Yeah. So before we go, there were two articles that came out the other day, kind of expanding on this whole Kent Ketter controversy that recently happened in the community, regarding ethics and regarding, you know, things being, you know, legal, but still allowed, and whether or not the community should be rallying as hard as they are against them. Kent Ketter and Card Hoarder recently agreed to sort of part ways. And so Kent is no longer on the team anymore. And there were two articles in particular that were addressing sort of the internet mob and trying to have like a real conversation about the issue. One of them was written by Brian DeMars over at Channel Fireball saying cheating isn't the only problem. His article kind of leaned on more the idea of the internet mob and whether or not we give them more power than they really should have. And the article that I preferred out of these two was Andrew Jessup. He's been killing it at Gathering Magic, by the way. So if you don't know who he is, or if you don't visit Gathering Magic very much, you should definitely read his articles because he's definitely bringing a fresh competitive perspective to the site. He wrote an article called Opening a Dialogue on Ethics, and he illustrates a couple of scenarios that are all allowed per se, but discusses whether or not they were ethical and whether or not there were other avenues that he could have took. And it seems like both of them were really well received. Hallie, what do you think about this discussion that people are trying to have regarding ethics in Magic?
Well, I also was more drawn to the Jessup article than the DeMars article. Personally, because I've been trying to play Infect recently, and a lot of his examples use Infect and different lines of play you can take with it. And I was helping a friend playtest for a modern RPGQ recently, and I was just like, I am playing this deck way too conservatively. I need to, you know, go on the internet and look for, like, look up Tom Ross videos and whatever and just learn how to actually play this deck because I don't have a clue. So anyway, I just liked, you know, the real world examples that he used in this article. But I agreed with him in some cases and I disagreed with him in some others. And I guess that's why this article was one that I engaged with a lot more. Like I just agreed with a lot of DeMars's points in his article and I just like wholeheartedly endorsed it. But I had a little more interaction, I guess, with the Jessup article. I definitely was not sure that I agreed with his premise that when something sets an ethical precedent, something should set an ethical precedent just because we see it in coverage. Like, I don't think that's necessarily true, and that, like, if you see something, that therefore it's necessarily acceptable. I think we should work to challenge that. And I think, you know, internet mobs can get out of control, but I think people are within their rights to, you know, stand up and say something when they do see something on coverage that doesn't look right. And he also gave three examples that were all very different and that were, you know, more ethical gray areas for different reasons. And there were some that I agreed with more than others. Like, one of them was even something that I know I've done before. Like, he talks about bluffing that you have something or making it seem like he has a become immense in a certain situation. And I know this is something that I've personally done. When I played Bant Company at the beginning of this year, I took it to GP Houston in February. One thing that I would do is I would look at my graveyard every time I put a morph down, regardless of what that morph was, to make my opponent think I had a Den Protector. And one reason why I did this was to hide a tell of mine that I knew cost me in matches. One of my playtesting partners would tell me all the time that my biggest tell was that every time I played a Den Protector, I would look at my graveyard. And I would say, well, I'm just looking at my graveyard. How am I going to know what's in my graveyard for Den Protector if I don't look at it? Like, it's, you know, what do I do to work on this? And he said, well, you can either stop doing it or you can just do it more often and, you know, see what happens. And so I started doing it more often. Every time I would play the Den Protector, or every time I would play any morph, I would look at my graveyard. And that actually ended up helping me win a match at the GP I played it in, because there was one point where I was playing against, like, a Grixis control deck, or a deck that had Radiant Flames. And I played a morph, and I looked at my graveyard. And the morph was not a Den Protector, it was a Stratus Dancer. But my opponent assumed it was a Den Protector, because I had one in a green up, but I also had one in a blue up, so it could have been a Stratus Dancer. They didn't know, but because of the gesture I made, they thought I was giving away a tell that it was a Den Protector. So they cast Radiant Flames in an attempt to wipe my board so I can get less value out of the Den Protector, and I flip up the Stratus Dancer to counter it. And what I did was not necessarily unethical, or at least I don't think it was unethical, but, you know, it was within the rules to do that. But I guess it is one of those situations where you could look at it and say that, you know, what I was doing was misleading. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's really up to interpretation. But I definitely think that, you know, bluffing something is definitely a skill. It's a valuable skill in Magic. I took more of an issue with his second example, where he said that he, like, intentionally dropped a card to make his opponent sacrifice their Fulminator Mage to get his land, thinking that, you know, his land was more important. First of all, like, given what he thought his opponent had, I don't think the spell Pierce was that valuable in that situation anyway. If his opponent had a handful of creatures, like, why does the spell Pierce matter? But the other thing was, to his point that what we see on coverage sets ethical precedents. If you pretend to make a mistake like that, then what you do is you make other people's honest mistakes look intentional, and mm-hmm. you delegitimize honest mistakes that pros can make, you know, in high pressure situations, like DeMar says in his article. And I think that, you know, although, you know, bluffing is, you know, a thing that you can do, I think that kind of gamesmanship doesn't have a place in Magic.
Katie, what do you think about this? You know, being the judge of the group and sort of seeing all of these situations that seem to, you know, kind of walk that line of, like, they're not technically wrong in that you couldn't necessarily, you know, lose a judge call over it, or they're not technically against the rules, but they are a little sketchy. Like, what do you think about this discussion?
So I think it walks a very fine line, because I wouldn't say any of these things are cheating, but what I would say is that if you do them and somebody realizes what you're doing, you might look like a scumbag. And while that's not against the rules, unfortunately sometimes, I think you have to weigh, so when you're doing something that you're like, this might be kind of scummy, and you're trying to win and you're a competitive player, you have to realize that it's your face, it's your name, that's on the line there. Like, if there's people watching, especially on coverage or something, you might feel the effects of that. And you need to realize going into it that if you want to win more than you care about your reputation, then go ahead and do it. And if you care about your reputation more than you want to win, then don't do it. If I was playing against somebody and they did something and I realized later they were scummy, I would be like, as long as it's in the rules, it doesn't super bother me personally. I like to play very, very tight games. So, you know, if somebody doesn't want me to take something back or, you know, they bluff something, I usually take like nothing away from my opponent. Like, they can do whatever they want as long as they're not cheating, but I will not, like the bluffing thing, I don't care if you bluff. I don't care what you're doing with your mana as long as you're tapping the right amount and whatever. Like, you know, you can bluff all you want and you can do anything within the limits of the game and I won't think you're scummy. I might be kind of mad that I lost or fell for it or something, but to me, if it's within the limits of the game, it's okay. But that doesn't mean that I would necessarily do that. Like, I don't think I would intentionally drop a card to make my opponent think something. I might bluff in other ways, but, you know, I don't want to come off as scummy. But if somebody else is playing a tight game and they don't want me to, you know, remember the rest in peace trigger or whatever it may be, I don't mind. That's fine. Because I believe in playing tight Magic when you're at a very competitive event like a GP, especially when you're getting into the last rounds and top eight and all that. I don't mind if somebody's playing super tight Magic and they are going to be nitpicky and what some might call rules lawyering. That's okay with me, but I just don't think I don't think I would do that personally. Like, I might be rules picky and, you know, not let people have a trigger if they missed it, but I don't think that I would go as far as some of these particular situations in trying to win, I guess.
And Chris, what do you think about this? You know, I know that we try our best to play as tight as we can, but I know that we're not necessarily as driven as some of these spikes are, these grinders are. And so what do you think about all of this?
I enjoyed both of the articles that were written for different reasons. I thought that the Damar's article was a good, I guess you would call it maybe like a primer for some people that maybe, you know, they're not used to some of the, I guess for lack of a better term, like Magic drama that can go on, whether or not people, you know, post something on Reddit or on Twitter or something to say, hey, we noticed this person was cheating, you know, in this particular instance, or this is something that looks kind of strange to us. And people might come in and be like, well, how do I process a situation like this? And so I just thought it was a good thing for him to say that, you know, internet witch hunts need to stop, mm-hmm. you know, depending on how you look at it, that you don't need to have this mob mentality and that kind of needs to go. And even just to stress that pros make mistakes. I mean, we're all people, being in high pressure situations, especially, you know, in a high stakes tournament can definitely put anyone under any kind of pressure. I don't care if you've won the pro tour, you know, you are definitely under scrutiny from, the general public, from judges, from people writing articles about your play, anything, everything, your opponent. So I can't even imagine being in that situation. I did also agree that only the judges should be the ones that are sussing out cheating versus misplays, because there is that kind of gray area where, is this a legitimate misplay or did someone just do something that could be construed as cheating? I would hate to be the judge involved in that particular situation, so hopefully that never happens to me. And I say that now, and maybe years down the road, something terrible will happen, but hopefully not. Knock on wood. And I also think that it was important to just say in general that it's better not to get drawn in with other people that, especially ones that are being like malicious and starting shit storms. Like, I believe that we're all free to have our opinion and we're all allowed to have our feelings about things. And even I think it was last week, CVM, you know, made a post on Twitter about how he didn't like people talking about doing bodily harm to other people because they may or may not have been cheating. Yeah. That's taking it a little far. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a card game. You know, I can understand why people might be upset if, in fact, maybe someone did cheat them at some point. But there are avenues that you can go without having to be like, well, I would just hurt this person if they did that to me. It's like, now you sound like a crazy person. Mm-hmm. And I also like that he brought up that adhering to the rules but not being in the spirit of the game is somewhat of an aspect of it for some people. Whereas in an Andrew Jessup's article, he just kind of breaks down like what his personal thought process is, which I appreciated. And, you know, that he's not necessarily maybe doing things that he considers to be scummy. Maybe some people would. I didn't personally think that anything in there was like out of hand or anything. I do agree, you know, with what everyone else has said about dropping the card might be something that I don't think I would do, because I get really wigged out if I even think I dropped a card. I'm like, oh no, did they see it? And they're like, I promise I didn't see your windswept teeth. And I was like, oh my, or something. So, you know, I don't think I would ever do that. Plus, you know, that probably walks a very fine line of, did you do this on purpose, or were you just like sweaty and dropped your cards? You know, and that's kind of weird. But I appreciate that he also reiterates a point that I always say in my head when I'm playing, which is always represent that you have it. Mm-hmm. Like, I always try to do that. Like, especially when I'm playing Titan Shift, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to play this mountain. I want to make them think I have a bolt, even if I don't have a bolt. Yeah. I'm going to, you know, represent this mana to say, maybe I have an anger of the gods. Maybe I'm going to wipe your board. I don't know. But do you know? You know? And I think that that aspect of the game is not a bad thing, because I think it's like with other games that you play where there is, you know, bluffing involved, where there is, you know, trying to outthink your opponent, you know, trying to see many lines ahead. And that even just his thought process breaking down, well, if he has this and I do this, and if this happens, and I'm just like, holy shit, like, you got this just from playing Infect versus like Jund or something. I don't even know if I necessarily always think that many steps ahead. Sometimes I am, depending on how dire the situation is, but it was just interesting to see someone else's internal thought process versus what my own might be. And maybe to think, you know, should I be looking at this differently? And especially like with the scenarios that were presented, it was like, oh yeah, you know, how would they win? And then he ends up winning. I'm like, really? Just because you did this one thing or made your opponent think something else was going to go down? And so I took a lot of learning away from his particular article, and I think there are subtle ways to let your opponent think that you can outfox them without actually doing so. I mean, I remember once just having a friend tell me that he made someone think that he could go off with Scapeshift, but they didn't even have him present the mountains. He didn't even have enough to win. But because the
opponent, I did that once before.
Yeah, but his opponent didn't even, you know, ask him. He was just like, you got it, you're done. So, you know, I think there just are things that you can present to people in the game that they will automatically be like, I'm out, I'm done, without asking for the proof. Me, I always want to see the damn proof, but, you know, so.
I want to see the receipts.
I want to know for sure you can do this play, because, you know, it's because of stuff like that. And so I think, like I said, that Andrew's article is very informative, very interesting. I definitely want to go back and read it again. I also would suggest for people to check out his Infect Primer, because I'm definitely going to be rereading that myself, since I'm trying to learn how to pilot the deck better. And, you know, like I said, Demar's was more just kind of a, felt like just a general PSA to be like, do not do the following things, or do not buy into this when looking at these situations. And so I think they both had good points that they highlighted about different issues about the same thing. And so I thought that that was cool.
Yeah, I found a blog that kind of summed up a lot of my thoughts on this. There's a young lady who started blogging recently on Tumblr. Her blog is lesbimagical.tumblr.com. L-E-S-B-I-M-A-G-I-C-A-L. And she kind of summed up my thoughts on this. And she brought up the fact that it's very difficult to have a discussion about ethics and magic, because to the people who are cheating, they view, and I'm not saying that Kent was cheating, they view their behavior as being ethical. And it's not necessarily that you're trying to talk about relativism or anything like that, but you really need to mention that, that these people don't feel they're doing anything wrong. And that trying to sort of hold people to like one standard isn't really possible. And that, you know, kind of like Andrew said, of how we need to sort of reframe the conversation, you know, instead you need to have a conversation about our respective moral principles and how those come into play during a tournament setting. Whether we as a community can establish a baseline that can be added to tournament procedures that judges can enforce, and, you know, the effects on the game and the community when lines of play like Kent's are taken at different RELs and in different environments. And I thought she hit the nail on the head. She wrote a really great blog post, so you should definitely check out her blog for more. I had a couple issues with Brian's post, and maybe I just interpreted it a little differently, but, you know, I think that people absolutely have the right to sort of vote with their dollars. And, you know, when you are part of the company. Like when you are sponsored by somebody, your actions are not just your own anymore. And, you know, if you're by yourself and you want to go to every PPTQ up and down the coast and rules layer and angle shoot or do what you want to do, and you're sort of beholden to nobody, that's fine. But, you know, when you are a face for something and you are part of something, that person or that company can choose to end your relationship at any time. And that's sort of what you agree to when you agree to be sponsored. And likewise, you know, people have the right to vote with their wallet. And I'm not saying whether or not I may not agree with it, but, you know, I have issues with, I don't support hate, for example. So like if I find a company that's, you know, or somebody who's talking about something that's anti-woman or anti-trans, I'm not going to give you my money. And that's my right to do that. And, I think rather than, you know, telling people that they shouldn't be upset or that they're not, you know, allowed to have those feelings or that they're not allowed to vote with their dollars, I'm not really sure I agree with that. Like, I think that that's well within our rights to say, I'm simply not going to support you. I'm simply not going to support your company if they support you. And I think that's something we all have a right to do. And, you know, I really appreciated that Andrew kind of left that out of the discussion, because that kind of, you know, framing it as a mob and framing it as, you know, I was unjustly, you know, some people even like to use really polarizing words. Like, you know, it's a lynch mob. And I'm like, no, don't say that. Don't say that. I remember when the Jim Davis thing went down and like all these pros were coming on the word, well, I guess I can't have an opinion now. And it's like, well, you can, but when it's a dumbass opinion, like we're going to tell you about it. And, you know, a lot of people like to assume that they're being mobbed or that they're being picked on, when in reality, you did something dumb and people are simply telling you that. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you've been mobbed. And I feel like that's just a very comfortable metaphor that people like to go to when they're called out for things. And I don't think that's always true. So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show? So I committed to doing the SCG Invitational. I'm officially going to the Invitational at the start of next month. I have a standard deck, which I rented from sparedeck.com, got a really great deal on it. So I'm going to spend the next month getting ready for standard, trying to learn standard. So if anybody has any tips on standard, or any tips on how to play Delirium, Black Green Delirium, I'd really appreciate that. That's the deck I'm going to take. Mrs. Mulligan's going to the Invy. Emma's going to be there. Jadian's going to be there. We're going to try to take it down. I know what I'm playing for modern, so that's fine. And there's also a Legacy challenge happening this weekend, which I might stream as well. So if you're in the Legacy, come check out my stream and you can watch me either reanimate some Grizzlebrands or bring back a bunch of zombies. So it should be a lot of fun.
Cool.
Sweet. Yeah. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can also find me on Snapchat and Instagram at HalCanSan. And you can check out my writing on the Card Kingdom newsletter.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at Mean Mugger. That's MeanMugger, or on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. My Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's. My blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. I really hope to have something out soon. It's been a little hairy between going to events and trying to decide what article I want to put out next, essentially. So hopefully something will be coming soon for you all.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That's OriginalEstrus. You can email me at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com. The show is on Twitter at @TheGFBracket. You can email us at TheGirlfriendBracket@gmail.com. And you can always toss us a couple dollars at patreon.com/TheGirlfriendBracket. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.